This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars: The Force Unleashed 2 by Sean Williams, based on the story by Hayden Blackman. Read for you by Jonathan Davis. Prologue. Cato Nymoidia. Juno Eclipse stood with her hands behind her back and stared down at Cato Nymoidia. From the Bridge of the Salvation, the densely forested world shone a brilliant green against the star-dusted black, and she was keenly reminded of other forest worlds she had visited during her career as an Imperial pilot. Kalos was the first. There she had obeyed orders that had resulted in the death of the entire planet's biosphere. Felucia was next, and that world, too, had been left poisoned in her wake. Kashyyyk, the last and most difficult to recall, had not been damaged at all. In fact, the prospects for its forest continued survival had taken a sharp turn for the better, following the destruction of the Skyhook that had threatened to enslave every last Wookiee and to ensure the planet remained part of the Empire forever. The resolution made in the ruins of a jungle hut, where a handful of people had vowed to rebel against the Emperor and free the galaxy's tormented trillions, was bound to help too. Given luck, then, the forests of Kashyyyk would survive. But Juno remembered wondering how she herself possibly could. The pain she felt had been too great, the sense of loss too deep. Every living thing reminded her of the part of her that had unexpectedly wakened within her and then died just as suddenly. Her heart beat with a heaviness that hadn't been there before, not even when she'd been held captive for months in the Empyrical, expecting to be executed at any moment. Sometimes she woke in the night still feeling his lips against hers. They had kissed just once, but the memory of it was burned in her brain. He had died, and she lived on. It had taken a year before she finally felt as though she might be over him. So why was she letting a bunch of trees bother her now? She told herself to get it together. Juno Eclipse had bigger things to worry about.
"Excuse me, Captain," barked a voice at her elbow. "Our probe droids are picking up an atmospheric disturbance in the vicinity of the target."
She turned away from the view to face her Bothan second-in-command. "What kind of disturbance, Nitram?"
"Explosions."
"Show me." The circular display screen in the center of the bridge zoomed in tight on the city closest to the Imperial stronghold. Secondary screens flashed infrared images conveyed by heavily encrypted transmissions from the droids on the ground. The bridge city hung like a vast urban hammock from its overarching stone spire. Several thick supporting cables were glowing red. One was actually burning. "Looks to me like nothing more than local insurrection," she said. "If it keeps Baron Tarko off our backs, all the better."
"Yes, sir."
Nitram cleared his throat. Juno studied his long face. "Speak your mind. That's an order."
"Well, there were some unusual heat readings immediately prior to the blasts. You can see them here and here."
He pointed to a recording time-stamped an hour earlier.
"It looks like a ship's exhaust."
"So where's the ship? I can't see it."
"That's exactly my point, sir."
He looked around the bridge, then leaned in closer to whisper.
"I think it might be General Kota."
Juno didn't know whether to be annoyed or amused. For such a young officer, Nitram was good. He had, in fact, stumbled across the truth of their mission with impressive and inconvenient speed. Fortunately, Juno had learned fast under her Imperial masters to keep every emotion well concealed. "You've been listening to too many stories, Nitram," she said, clearing the incriminating secondary screens. Wherever Kota is, he's not slumming here with us. That was a lie, of course. She would recognize the signature of the rogue shadow anywhere, even when it was fully cloaked.
Yes, sir.
Nitram had no choice but to accept it as the truth. She was, after all, his superior officer. But that didn't have to be the end of it. Sound the alert. I want 12 fighters strafing that city in the next 5 minutes. Let's take the chance to strike while the Baron is busy. Nitram saluted.
Yes, sir.
He swiveled briskly on one heel and snapped out a string of orders. Juno turned back to the window, hiding a smile. The EF-76 Nebulon B frigate Salvation was a valuable part of the growing Alliance Navy, and she had no intention of putting her inexperienced crew in serious harm's way. But it was a training run, she told herself, and what better way to learn than in the thick of combat? She was sure, anyway, that the infamous Baron Tarko would soon have more to worry about than her green hotshots. Sirens wailed through the ship. Feet thundered on bulkheads. With a string of distant thuds, a dozen Y-wings launched, and wobbling only slightly against the starscape, grouped in 2 6-ship formations, rocketing down into the atmosphere. "Take us out," she told Nitram. "No point hiding now." The Salvation's 7 ion engines roared into life, thrusting it from its redoubt behind the planetary system's smaller moon. The deflector shield generator was running at full capacity, ready for immediate reprisal. Baron Tarko's facility on the ground wasn't heavily enforced. It consisted of a slave processing plant with a number of ancillary buildings, including barracks, laser batteries, and TIE fighter launch pads, all suspended from the bridge city over a giant sinkhole. A constant stream of freighters came and went from the world, redistributing the Empire's ill-gotten prisoners. Intelligence made very clear that the Baron thrived on bribes from high-ranking Imperial officers keen to obtain the best stock, while at the same time selling excess numbers to the Hutts and other criminals. What he did with his wealth exactly, no one knew, but all could guess at the suffering he was responsible for. If someone were to put an end to his brutal regime, they would be doing the entire galaxy a favor. That wasn't the Salvation's job, however. Juno's orders were strict. Prick the Baron's defenses and see how strong they were. Shake her young crew into battle readiness and, under no circumstances, risk the integrity of the ship. The official line was that resources were more valuable to the rebellion than tiny victories, at least at the moment. When the Navy was big enough and the lines of supply more secure, then the fight could begin in earnest. Not everyone agreed with the official line, though. Some thought the fight had already begun and could be pursued by a small force as readily as by something larger and therefore less defensible. "Take out the right target," the naysayer said, "and entire star systems could be disrupted. Like the ripples that spread across a pond's surface at the drop of a single stone, every Imperial facility and process that relied on slave labor would be slowed down by a successful attack on Cato Nymoidia." Juno had heard the argument 1,000 times. She knew just how much difference even a single person could make. The newly formed Rebel Alliance wouldn't exist at all, most likely, but for him. She shook her head, annoyed at letting herself be distracted again. Kota needed her. She wouldn't let him down. News of the frigate's presence spread fast through the freighters orbiting the plant. Many vanished into hyperspace, taking their slaves with them. Others broke orbit and began to descend dirtside. Her fighters dodged among them, increasing the chaos of the sky lanes. Red dots on the display screen signaled the launch of a TIE defense squad. 10 ships exactly as expected. Laser batteries swiveled to track the rebel squadron. She tuned half an ear to the star pilot chatter, even as she monitored Nitram's handling of the crew.
"Watch that tower, Green 6!
On your tail, Blue 4. Arm turbo lasers target those batteries.
Keep it tight, Green 2! Keep it tight!
Fire at will!"
The Salvation rocked as its powerful lasers unleashed their deadly energies onto the planet below. Juno felt a rush of cautious pride. Her people were nervous, excited, and occasionally frightened, as was perfectly appropriate. Cato Nymoidia might be an outpost, but it was fundamentally connected to the Empire as a whole. Stick around too long, and the whole weight of the enemy would come to bear on them. Everyone understood that they had to be in and out fast, or they'd never get out at all. The turbo lasers missed, but someone else didn't. The ground-based lasers exploded into a million pieces, destroyed by unknown fire. Juno gave silent thanks to Kota and his invisible militia, and readied herself for Nitram's excited announcement that his theory had been confirmed. Kota was indeed active in the galaxy, striking hard and fast against the Alliance leadership's express orders. They couldn't stop him, and they had many reasons to be grateful for his activities. Baron Tarko would soon regret ever coming to his attention. Instead of gloating, Nitram said in a worried tone,
"Launches. 10 more TIEs.
That can't be right, Juno said, leaning closer to check the data. It was all too right, unfortunately. Intelligence had gotten the fighter strength wrong. Worse still, the TIE fighters were coming their way.
Launch all remaining Y-wings and put someone else in turbo laser control.
I want the roof of the barracks in flames in the next 2 minutes if I have to come down there and press the button myself.
Yes, sir.
The crew's energy level ramped up a notch. There was no time to hold back out of nerves or uncertainty. Intel flooded through the ship like an invisible gas. Within moments, they would be under attack, and all were aware of the frigate's strategic disadvantages. It was well-armed and well-shielded for a vessel of its size, but the slender midsection connecting the engineering and crew quarters could be ruptured by concentrated enemy fire. Were that to happen, the atmosphere would vent immediately, killing everyone aboard. The turbo lasers fired again. Targets on the ground burst into brilliant balls of fire. Juno caught glimpses of the cloaked rogue shadow ducking and weaving among the TIE fighters below. It looked like the general was trying to find a place to land. Once he and his commandos were on the ground, the ship could automatically retreat to a safe location and wait for a signal to collect them when the mission was over. Juno hadn't flown the rogue shadow since the events on the Death Star, but she still knew its specifications by heart. Better than she knew the Salvation's, in fact. Here, she was just the commander. In the rogue shadow, she had been captain and crew. There was an important difference. Rebel and Imperial starfighters met in the vacuum between the frigate and the planet. Energy weapons flashed and ricocheted. The screens were full of light. She wished she was out there with the pilots, breathing acrid cockpit air, thumb growing tired on the firing stud. Her heart beat faster for them, even as she reminded herself of her new duties. War was simpler in a starfighter, but it wasn't better. The bigger picture was what mattered. Winning the war, not the battle. In that sense, she had some sympathy for those who opposed Coda's way of thinking. Going in too hard, too fast was a sure way to be encircled and wiped out. A degree of caution never went astray. That was why she surreptitiously helped him. To keep him in check as much as to watch his back. Someone needed to make sure he didn't go AWOL as he had before. The rebellion needed him. Thinking of the downsides of Coda's campaign made her frown. What was taking him so long? The rogue shadow should have been on its way ages ago. Nitram, concentrate fire on those cannon emplacements there and there. She indicated two locations near the barracks. The fire coming from both was much greater than intelligence had indicated it should be. Maybe that was the problem.
Yes, sir.
Rebel starfighters changed course to attack the targets. The exchange of weapons fire intensified. Juno squinted at the data, worrying at the inconsistencies between the intelligence gathered from Imperial sources and what lay evident before her. Get those probe droids closer to the barracks. Something doesn't look right to me. Finally, balanced forces jockeyed for position on the ground and in orbit as she waited for the data to trickle in. From a distance, the Imperial installation looked perfectly normal. It possessed a spaceport, shield generators, security compound, and so on. All the same as on any occupied world. But it was better defended than most, and the spaceport was crowded. Why land so many ships on commercial territory when there was plenty of space over by the slaving compound? More important, why were Imperial records on Cato Nymoidia so wildly different from what was actually here? There was little to tell from the data, so she turned her attention to the starscape around them. No sign of Imperial reinforcements. Why hasn't the Baron called for help yet? She asked Nitram.
I don't know, sir. We've been monitoring signals closely.
She cupped her chin and thought hard. It was only a matter of time before the Imperial fleet showed up, whether Baron Tarko called for it or not. All it took was just one fleeing freighter to sound the alarm, and the Emperor's boot would descend to crush the rebels. Really, with forces evenly matched and Kota dragging his heels, she should already have sounded the retreat, rather than risk the salvation. Give me the comm, she said. Don't listen. Mitram's ears went up and then flattened down against his skull.
Whatever you say, sir.
She selected a little used channel. Blackout to Blackguard. Respond, please. The line crackled for a moment, and then Kota's gruff voice came on.
I don't have time to talk.
Bad luck. This is taking too long. You need to pull out.
Negative, Blackout. Leave if you want to. I'm staying to finish the job.
She ignored the implied reproach in his words.
How? You're never going to get close enough to the barracks to get Baron Tarko. It's too well defended.
That's no barracks.
Then what is it?
I don't know, but it won't be anything by the time I...
Kota's signal disappeared into static, in time with a bright flash of light from below. Two of the probe droids winked out. The Rogue Shadow's heat signature disappeared into an expanding ball of fire. Someone had dropped something big on Cato Nymoidia, taking out several Rebel and Imperial starfighters at once. Fire licked at the walls of the Imperial compound, making them glow bright red. The crackle over the comm intensified.
Respond, Blackguard. This is Blackout. Do you need help down there, Blackguard?
Nothing. Juno tried again, forcing herself to speak calmly. Nitram was watching.
Blackguard to Blackout. Respond immediately.
Nothing. The bridge was silent. She stood, frozen, with one question echoing in her mind. What would the man she had loved have done now? She knew the answer. He would do everything in his power to rescue his friend and Jedi Master. He would fight with every drop of energy in his body. He would let nothing stand in his way. But she wasn't him. She didn't have his powers, and she did have responsibilities he never had to consider. Besides, he was dead, and now there was no sign of Kota either. What was she supposed to do? Rescue a ghost? If she knew how to do that, she would have done it a year ago. An alarm sounded. The bridge came to life around her.
We've got company,
said Nitram, gaze dancing across the rapidly filling display screen.
Two frigates, a cruiser, and... yes, a Star Destroyer. Imperial class. Could be the Adjudicator. It's launching fighters. Captain!
Everyone on the bridge was looking at her.
Recall our pilots, she said in a clear and level voice, knowing that her hand was being forced.
There was only one responsible decision open to her now.
Bring everyone aboard, then get us out of here fast.
At once, sir.
Juno stepped back from the display screen in order to let her officers go about their work. Tiny dots converged on the Salvation as its starfighters broke off their engagements with their enemy and raced for safe harbor. She counted 18, which meant six pilots wouldn't be going home. In exchange for what? Again, the answer lay before her. Her crew was functioning perfectly well, and they knew through hard experience that Ketu Nymoidia was better defended than they'd expected. The Salvation had pricked the Empire and forced it to respond. Someone, somewhere, would be grateful for the Adjudicator's unexpected absence from their skies. But where did that leave her? "Take us the long way to the rendezvous," she told Nitram. "We don't want anyone on our tail."
"Yes, sir."
Nitram didn't question her order, even though the reason she had given him was meaningless. The truth was that she needed time to think. Coda was gone. How was she going to explain that to the Alliance leadership? "Farewell, old friend," she thought. "What kind of mess have you landed me in this time?"
"Calculations complete," said Nitram.
"Ready the hyperdrive," she responded automatically. The shields were taking a heavy pounding, making the floor sway beneath her. Just two starfighters remained outside. When they were aboard, she gave the order.
"Jump!" The Salvation rushed into hyperspace, leaving the ill-fated world, its mysteries and its ghosts, far behind.
Part 1. Revolution. Chapter 1. Present Day.
From the depths of meditation came a man's voice.
"You're running out of executioners, Baron."
Starkiller opened his eyes. He knew that voice. It tugged at parts of him that had lain dormant for a long time, or never genuinely existed at all, depending on one's viewpoint. He shied away from both memory and contemplation. There was no point wasting energy on either when his very survival was at stake. How many days he had been down the pit, he no longer knew, but in that time he had neither eaten nor slept. His enemy wasn't physical in the sense of a foe he could strike down or manipulate. It was himself, his fallible body, his weak mind, his faltering spirit. He would endure and emerge whole, or never emerge at all. Such was the life of Darth Vader's secret apprentice.
"He is dead."
"Then he is now more powerful than ever."
More voices. He closed his eyes and shook his head. Kneeling, he placed his manacled hands on the slick metal surface below him and concentrated on hearing the world outside. Long stretches of isolation had attuned him to the cloning facility's many moods. Through the metal, he heard a relentless hiss that could only be rain. Sharp cracking sounds were lightning, coming and going in staccato waves. Rolling rumbles were thunder. And a deeper note still was the song of seabed hugging currents that circled the world. He was on Kamino. Starkiller was sure of that much. He had been reborn on the distant water world, where a significant percentage of the Emperor's stormtroopers were grown. Here it was that he would live and grow strong, or die weak and unmourned. Every hardship, every hurdle was one step closer to full mastery of his fate. That was the lesson underlying all lessons. A new note entered the planet's endless song, the scream of a Thai advanced prototype starfighter. Angular and fleet, with bent vanes, it entered the atmosphere with a whip-crack sonic boom and descended on a bold, high-energy descent toward the facility. Starkiller tensed. He knew that ship's sound and could sense the well-practiced hand behind its controls. He heard stormtroopers marching quickly in response to their master's electronic summons, calling orders to one another as they went. Blast doors opened and closed with booming thuds. The facility woke from its unattended slumber. He didn't move as the TIE fighter landed. He didn't open his eyes as two heavy booted feet dropped onto the platform and began the long walk through the facility. He breathed at a steady pace through the whine of a turbo lift and the hiss of doors opening. A ring of red lights at the top of the pit came on, and although he felt the light against his hunchback, he didn't look up. He heard breathing, mechanical and regular. Heavy footsteps came to the very lip of the pit and stopped.
"You're alive,"
said Darth Vader. At the voice of his former master, Starkiller looked up, blinking against the light. Vader's boots were 3 meters above him, barely visible behind the lights and the grate that separated the pit from the dark room beyond. The Dark Lord loomed like a shadow, a black hole in the shape of a robed man. Starkiller's throat worked. It was so dry, he could barely talk at all.
"How long this time?"
13 days. Impressive.
The compliment was hard won. It ground out of the triangular grill covering Vader's mouth and fell on Starkiller's ears like dust.
"The Force gives me all I need."
"The Force?"
The hint of praise turned to warning, as it did so often. Starkiller lowered his head. He knew what was required. The weeks of training and isolation he'd endured made that exceedingly clear.
"The dark side, I mean. My master."
One gloved hand moved. The grate flew open.
"Come,"
said the dark figure above him. The metal floor beneath Starkiller lurched and began to ascend. He forced his leg muscles to unlock from their long kneeling position and stood to meet Darth Vader upright and unbowed. The room above was sparsely furnished, with no windows, just one exit, the turbo lift, and little light. Shadows cast by terminals and floor lamps made its very dimensions ambiguous. But Starkiller knew from long training exercises that the room was circular and its walls were impenetrable. He flexed his fingers, yearning for a lightsaber to hold. Muscle memory was keener than any other kind. Even with the new skills Darth Vader had taught him, his hands wanted to fight the way he knew best. At the very edge of his vision stood several skeletal proxy droids awaiting activation. If he was lucky, he would be unshackled and allowed to duel some of them. If not... The lift ground to a halt. Vader stepped back to study him. Starkiller felt the keen eye of the Sith Lord on his gaunt form, even through the layers of durasteel, obsidian, and plasteel that covered the man's face. Something was different. Although nothing had been said, he could tell that this was no ordinary training session. He waited. There was no hurrying Darth Vader.
"I have a mission for you."
"Yes, my master."
"Starkiller's former conspirator has been captured."
He experienced a moment of confusion. Then his memory stirred, providing a name. The name of the one who had lured him away from the dark side and to his death. The same voice that had disturbed him from his meditation.
"Vader thinks he's turned you, but I can sense your future. And Vader isn't part of it. I sense only... me?"
"General Coda," he said, struggling to keep himself anchored to the present.
"Yes. You will travel to Cato Nymordia and execute him."
"And then will my training be complete, Master?"
"You will not be ready to face the Emperor until you have faced a true Jedi Master."
The voice was Darth Vader's, but again from another time. Another memory. The present-day Darth Vader hadn't spoken at all. Starkiller put his manacled hands to his head and turned away, lest his disconcertion be exposed. No matter how he tried, no matter how he concentrated, the past simply wouldn't leave him alone. Vader's close attention hadn't ebbed.
You are still haunted by visions.
Yes. There was no point denying it. Yes, my master.
Tell me what you see.
He didn't know where to start. 13 days this time, he had stayed motionless in the pit, subjected to visions and hallucinations through all his senses. Strange odors, fleeting touches, voices calling him, sights he could never have imagined. He tried to ignore them, and when he couldn't ignore them, he tried to piece them together instead. Neither was entirely possible, and every attempt hurt so badly, he despaired of it ever ending. Sometimes, he said falteringly, I smell a forest on fire.
Continue.
I see the general falling, and feel the ground shake as a starship crashes around me, and I hear a woman's voice when I try to sleep. He swallowed. This was the most painful recollection of all. I can't understand what she's saying. Do you know who she is? A pleading note had entered his voice, and he hated himself for it.
They are the memories of a dead man.
Vader came closer, his physical presence lending weight to his words.
A side effect of the accelerated cloning process and the memory flashes used to train you. They will fade.
What if they don't?
Then you will be of no use to me.
Starkiller straightened. For the first time, that fact had been said aloud. He had always known it was so. Darth Vader wasn't renowned for his charity. But to hear it stated so baldly that this Starkiller, this clone, would be disposed of like some faulty droid if he didn't pull himself together soon, had a profoundly focusing effect. Not for long. Try the Corellian Razor Hounds. That was a new voice, one he hadn't heard before. He winced, and knew that by wincing, he had effectively doomed himself.
Starkiller's emotions made him weak. If you are to serve me, you must be strong.
What form of service that might take, Darth Vader had never said. To take the former Starkiller's place, he presumed, as a weapon that could be aimed at the Emperor, then Vader's enemies, whenever he commanded. From treacherous commanders to perhaps the Emperor himself. That was how it had been, and how he assumed it would be now. For the moment, however, that didn't matter. The new Starkiller wanted only to live. I am strong, my master, and I'm getting stronger. Vader stepped behind him and waved a hand. Metal complained as the manacles dropped from Starkiller's wrists and hit the floor with a boom.
Show me.
Numerous pairs of eyes lit up in the shadows. The proxy droids were activating. Starkiller's fists balled in readiness. He had defeated their training programs over and over again. There wasn't a Jedi simulation that could beat him. But this was different. Even as Darth Vader provided him with his weapons, two lightsabers with matched crystals producing identical red blades, he saw that he wouldn't be fighting Jedi Knights this time. The targets stepping out of the shadows wore uniforms not dissimilar in color to the Sith's ancient enemy, but these were ordinary men, armed with nothing more than blasters. He had seen such armor before in the memories of the original Starkiller's life. Men like this had fought him in a TIE fighter factory high above Nar Shadda. They had been on Corellia, too. He remembered the places clearly, even if he couldn't put them in context. The uniforms weren't Imperial. That was the only thing he could be sure of. More voices came to him, a veritable babble of overlapping statements that went some way to filling one hole in his memory. We'll join your alliance. All we needed was someone to take the initiative. let this be an official declaration of rebellion. And he did remember now. The proxy droids were wearing the uniform of Kota's militia, later adopted by the Rebellion. The Rebellion, the original Starkiller, had brought into being through a mixture of deceit and something that felt, through the obscuring veils of the cloning process, remarkably like sincerity.
You must destroy what he created,
Darth Vader intoned. Starkiller ground his teeth together. If he was going to survive the coming minutes, he had to concentrate. He wasn't really destroying the Rebellion, just an imitation of it. And what did the Rebellion matter now anyway? It existed. The original Starkiller was dead. He needed to move on. The troopers rushed him from all sides. Twin red blades flashed as he met their advance, spinning and slashing with an easy grace that belied the strength behind it. Mastery of the Jarkhai dual lightsaber fighting style hadn't come easily, even given his inherited knowledge of the Naimen and Ataro techniques. Using two blades came with both advantages and disadvantages. Although he could attack or defend himself against more than one opponent at once, he could only wield his lightsabers one-handed, reducing the power of his blows. Building up his physical strength had therefore been a key part of his training on Kamino, starting with simple weights and graduating to combat training with droids like these. Dueling the Dark Lord himself had come last of all, and he had clung to that ultimate challenge, even as his mind played games with him. He might not know who he was, but he could learn, and had learned, how to fight. Fight he did, deflecting every attack the foe rebels dealt against him, singly or in pairs and trios. Holographic limbs and blasters were no match for his blades. Sparks flew. Droids fell in pieces. Brown uniforms turned red with illusory blood. More droids issued from the wall, crowding him, coming at him in waves of four or more. Starkiller went into a fighting trance, stabbing and sweeping complex arcs through air. His nostrils were full of smoke. The stink cleared his head. No more voices assailed him, and no doubts either. He was who he was. Born to kill, he killed. With a roar, he forced his way through a wall of rebels, slashing and hacking as he went. They fell apart on either side, leaving just one standing before him. He raised both blades to strike him down. Not him. Her. She was a slender blonde woman in an officer's uniform, clutching a blaster in both hands. Starkiller froze. He knew that face. He took a step toward the woman.
You're still loyal to Vader, after all he did to us, branding me a traitor and trying to kill you.
No, he said. The words in his head wouldn't be drowned out.
I saw you die, but you've come back.
No, he repeated, raising his blades.
Don't make me leave another life behind.
No! The woman cowered before him.
Wait,
she said in a voice identical to the one in his head.
Don't!
Now the fate of this alliance rests only with you. He lowered his blades, stunned out of his fighting trance. The voices were the same. Memory stirred in his mind. Images of the woman before him came in a bewildering rush. Vader wanted him to destroy everyone the original Starkiller had fought with, and that meant this woman, this rebel officer, this... Juno.
Yes, she said.
Strike her down,
came the command from Vader.
I can't.
You must learn to hate what he loved,
said Vader, and suddenly, it was just the three of them in the center of the droid-strewn training ground. Starkiller, the Sith who had created him, and a woman from the first Starkiller's past. Conflicting impulses warred within him, triggered by the ongoing cascade of recollections. Juno was Juno Eclipse, the woman Starkiller had, yes, loved. But he wasn't Starkiller. So what did he owe her? He was just a clone. And she was only a droid. An illusion, fashioned to test him. What did it matter if he did as he was told? As he had been bred to do? His hands trembled. The twin red blades wavered. They grew steadier as he drew his elbows back, preparing to strike. I guess I'll never need to live this down. He remembered a tender pressure against his lips. The feel of her body against his. A heat he had never experienced before. In this life or any other. He couldn't do it. He couldn't kill her. With a double click, he deactivated his blades. His arms came down and hung at his sides.
It is as I feared.
Darth Vader lashed out, channeling the dark side with practiced ease. Starkiller winced, but it was the training droid the Dark Lord had targeted. His lightsaber sliced it neatly in two. The image of Juno Eclipse vanished in a shower of sparks. Starkiller held his ground. No more, my master. No more pretense. What will you do with me? Darth Vader strode to face his former apprentice, kicking the body of the droid out of his path.
You will receive the same treatment as the others.
What others?
Those who came before you went mad within months. Tormented by emotional imprints I was unable to erase. Some would not kill their father. Others, their younger self. With you, it is this woman. Now you will suffer the fate they did.
Starkiller bowed his head, rocked by the revelation that he wasn't the only Starkiller Darth Vader had recreated. This he had never been told. The possibility hadn't even been insinuated, although he should have guessed. How many had come before him? How many had died before they had ever truly lived? Could his creator possibly be telling the truth about their stubborn, emotional imprints? He spared no feelings for the father he could no longer remember, or the boy he had stopped being long ago. It didn't seem remotely possible that any version of Starkiller could do anything other than share that love for Juno Eclipse. Another vivid memory tore through him. Staring down in shock at the sight of his master's lightsaber, protruding from his stomach. Unbearable pain, falling heavily to his knees with a choked scream. And another woman's voice. The dying words of a Jedi master he had killed.
The Sith always betray one another, but I'm sure you'll learn that soon enough.
His mind cleared, and he stared in new understanding at the Dark Lord before him. Vader was lying. There had been no other clones. Or if there had been, they had felt the same way as him. The original Starkiller had loved Juno Eclipse, and so did he. He was sure of it. He felt it in his bones, in the genetic machinery of his cells. It was the one thing he was sure of. Vader wanted to weaken that certainty, to turn him back into a weapon, by implying that this feeling was spurious. And worse, the act of killing Juno Eclipse was symbolic only, here in the Vader's secret cloning laboratory. How long until that became Juno's actual slaughter? Would that have been the next stage in his training? The hum of the Dark Lord's lightsaber changed pitch slightly as Vader shifted position. Before Vader could strike, Starkiller turned. He didn't activate his own lightsabers. Vader would be expecting that, a defensive pose, or at best, a half-hearted attack. Starkiller would surprise him with the one weapon Vader couldn't wield in return. A burst of lightning arced from Starkiller's fingers. Too late. The Dark Lord raised his lightsaber to catch the attack. Lightning crawled up and down his chestplate and helmet, provoking a painful whine from his breathing apparatus. The servo motors in his right arm strained. Starkiller had only a split second before his former master repelled the attack. The Force flowed through him. Droid parts and debris rose up and spun around the room. With a harsh rending sound, the metal wall burst outward, letting in the fury of the storm. But even in the grip of his passions, he knew that there was a difference. He was intimately familiar with what being driven by negative emotions felt like. His original had been a slave to the dark side, until Juno and Kota had showed him how to be free. That legacy remained even now. He would choose the emotions that ruled him. He would not be a slave to them. The dark side tugged at Starkiller, and it was hard to resist. He hated his former master. He feared for Juno. He doubted the very fact of his existence. Killing the man who had created him would go some way to solving at least two of those problems. The temptation was very strong. Vader's blade caught the edge of the lightning. The Dark Lord began to straighten. Starkiller leapt for the hole he had torn through the wall and entered the storm. He jumped high and long, aiming for the landing platform he had located by hearing alone weeks ago. He came down with a solid thud on the slick metal platform just meters from Vader's TIE fighter. Lightning split the sky into a thousand pieces. Thunder boomed. Far below and all around, the sea raged. The rain and wind scoured him clean. He opened his mouth and felt moisture on his tongue for the first time in 13 days. After so long in the pit, it tasted like freedom itself. His arrival took the squadron of stormtroopers guarding the facility by surprise, but they reacted quickly enough. Sirens sounded. Blaster rifles came up to target him. Three AT-STs standing guard over the landing platform clanked and began to turn. Starkiller bared his teeth. His heart beat with an excitement he hadn't felt since his awakening in Vader's laboratory. This was why he'd been made. This was why he existed. He reached out with his hands and flexed his will. The Force responded, swelling and rising in him like an invisible muscle. A nearby communications tower groaned and twisted. Sparks flew. He wrenched the tower down and sideways, sweeping it over the platform, knocking the AT-STs into the ocean, and crushing the stormtroopers gathering to rush him. Something exploded. A generator pushed far beyond its capacity. Through the exploding shell of shrapnel stalked a black figure holding a red lightsaber. Vader was moving with surprising speed. Starkiller almost smiled. Vader's rage was not so easily escaped. But he had done it once before. He would do it again. The starfighter behind him was unharmed by the devastation he had wrought. Starkiller ran to it and leapt inside. He worked its familiar controls with confident speed, activating systems still warm from its last flight. Its ion engine snarled. An invisible fist gripped the starfighter. Starkiller increased the thrust. His determination met Darth Vader's rage, and for an instant, he was unsure which would win. Then, all resistance fell away, and the TIE fighter leapt for the sky. He fell back into the seat and watched the black storm clouds approach him. Electrical discharges danced around the cockpit. Darkness briefly shrouded him. Then he was through and above the clouds and rocketing high into the atmosphere. The planetary shield surrounding Kamino was designed to keep ships out, not in, so he passed easily through their visible barrier. Stars appeared, and Vader was far behind. Now what? He didn't dare believe that he was entirely free, or that Juno was entirely safe. He had to find her before Vader did. He had to be with her. Every breath he took, filled him with the certainty of that fact. This was the emotion that would rule him, not revenge, or bloodlust, or despair. But how to pursue this mission? Where did he start looking for one woman in an entire galaxy?
Starkiller's former conspirator has been captured.
General Coda, if anyone knew where she was, it would be him. As the cloud-racked face of Kamino receded behind him, Starkiller locked in a course for Kato Nymoidia.
Chapter 2. 4 days earlier.
The Solidarity shone like a miniature star in the reflected light of Athega System's blazing primary. The streamlined, organic-looking star cruiser, a recent Mon Calamari model, hung in the shadow of volcanic Nicolon, a small world about as inhospitable as any Juno could imagine. There, the Solidarity and its small flotilla of attendant vessels were simultaneously hidden from any passing gaze and shielded from the blazing, hull-stripping light of the deadly sun.
"Your request to come aboard has been granted,"
Juno's second-in-command said. Nitram spoke cautiously, as though reluctant to intrude on her mood.
"The shuttle is ready to launch."
Juno didn't blame him. Knowing what she faced, she had been tense throughout the journey, and her crew had left her alone, which was exactly what she had needed. She had a lot to consider where the Alliance leadership was concerned. "Thank you, Nitram. You have the helm until I return." He saluted, touching his left ear with the tip of one paw-like hand.
"Yes, sir."
She strode unhesitatingly from the bridge, keen to give the impression that she had no doubts at all about her return, when in fact, there were no certainties at all. She had put her ship at risk to assist Coda on one of his unauthorized missions. In the past, the success of Coda's missions had protected her from disciplinary action. This time, she had no such recourse. Officers had been demoted for much less. The short hop in the shuttle seemed to pass in seconds. She saluted the escort awaiting her at the other end, keeping the fear that it was there to take her prisoner deeply concealed. "Welcome aboard, Captain. Commodore Vetus is expecting you. This way, please." The detail fell in around her, and she matched their pace step for step. Around them, the ship hummed with industry and discipline, its white fittings clean and well-maintained. Her ship, the Salvation, seemed old and clunky by comparison. It had been liberated from the Empire during a skirmish over Wylesia, and renamed in the style of the fledgling rebellion. The Salvation still bore the scars of battle, unlike the Solidarity, which looked brand new. The issue of the ships making up the Alliance's fleet occupied more than her own mind, as she discovered on being admitted into the Commodore's secure conference room. Yat de Vetus was a Rhodian, and a natural for enlistment with the rebel forces, given the Empire's xenophobic stance on non-humans. A privateer of some standing, he'd risen quickly through the ranks of the Corellian resistance, ultimately to be handpicked by Garm Bel Iblis to lead the attack group Juno belonged to. He was short, and his basic became increasingly accented under stress, but he was liked and respected by his officers. Juno had served with him briefly after the birth of the Rebel Alliance on Kashyyyk, and she knew that, whatever came next, it wouldn't be born from maliciousness or ill-feeling on his part.
"I'll hear nothing bad said about the MC-80.
Vetus was pacing from one end of the conference room to the other, addressing the rest of the small gathering. Present via hologram were Mon Mothma and Garm Bel Iblis, presumably from their respective homeworlds. The senators looked stressed and didn't notice Juno's entry. Princess Leia Organa attended in person. She returned Juno's salute with a respectful nod.
"So far," thought Juno. "So good."
"The redundancy of its shield system is a prime advantage," Vetus was saying. I cannot overemphasize how important this is in conflicts against the Empire. We will always be outweaponed, so defense should always be our first priority.
I understand, Commodore, said Mon Mothma. But the simple fact is that we can't afford any more of them. Not at the moment. Our resources are stretched too far as it is.
If the Mon Calamari won't give them to us, said Bel Iblis, then we must take them.
We're not pirates, said Leia. My father would not agree to this.
Your father isn't here. Perhaps if we had greater access to his resources.
Juno cleared her throat, and the Commodore turned to face her.
Ah, good. Captain Eclipse, would you care to report the outcome of your mission to Cato Nymordia?
Of course, sir. She came deeper into the room, trying to take the measure of the meeting. Clearly something had leaked. Someone on her bridge, or perhaps in the starfighter squadrons, had let slip what had happened. So the people before already knew part of it. The question was, would they give her a fair hearing? Or had they already made up their minds?
My orders were explicit, she said, deciding to draw the picture in black and white herself, and thereby disallow any enemies she might have the advantage. Gather intelligence. Shake up my crew. That's all. When the opportunity came to assist General Kota in his mission to kill the Imperial Administrator on Cato Nymordia, I decided to do so.
What kind of assistance did you provide?
Bel Iblis asked, without any sign of prejudgment. She knew that he would be interested, first and foremost, in the military angle.
We acted as a distraction for the ground forces, primarily by launching starfighters, but also by making the frigate's presence known. We jammed signals in and out in as much as we could. The Salvation engaged directly with the enemy only when it became clear that General Kota required our active support.
Did he know you were going to be there? Asked Mon Mothma, who no doubt cared less about the tactical details than the circumstances under which the brief alliance had come about.
He did, Senator, Juno said.
And how did he come to be privy to this information?
Because I told him 2 days in advance.
I see.
Mon Mothma's lips tightened.
Would you care to explain why?
I wasn't aware that I was required to keep secrets from a general in the Rebel Alliance.
But you are aware, no doubt, that the general's actions are not always sanctioned by the Alliance.
Yes, Senator.
Do you consider yourself to be part of his renegade campaign?
No, Senator.
Yet you disobey orders in order to help him. How do you explain that?
Juno felt as though the deck was slipping out from beneath her. She wondered again who had sold her out, and if she would get the chance to find out why before she was decommissioned. Maybe worse.
Permission to speak freely, Senator.
Granted,
said Garmbel Iblis. Mon Mothma glanced at him in surprise and some annoyance, but didn't countermand him.
I have helped General Kota before, Juno said, on Druckenwell, Salonia, and Kuat. Each time, his missions were successful in helping the Alliance. Each time, my assistance cost the Alliance nothing. I took no orders from him, and he accepted the limitations of our arrangement. He knew that the responsibilities of my command took precedence over the success of his mission.
At least I hope he did, she added silently to herself.
We were on the same side, Senator, and I am not ashamed of helping him. I would help him again in a heartbeat, if I could.
Everyone started to speak at once, but it was Mon Mothma's voice that carried the moment.
Did you know about this, Commodore?
No, Senator, but I take full responsibility.
Vidos's green skin had turned faintly purple around the edges. Juno hoped that didn't mean anger among his species.
Commodore Vidos couldn't have known, she said. I was careful to keep it a secret from him, because I knew that he would not approve.
Did you take any losses, Captain? Asked Mon Mothma.
6 starfighters, she said.
That's less than our last official mission, which was considered a success.
I want more details,
said Bill Iblis, leaning forward in the hologram to steeple his fingers.
What did your collaboration with Coda gain us?
Well, we know that Cater Nymoidia is better defended than we initially thought. It's taken some hits and brought in reinforcements. The Empire knows we're watching the slave industry now. Baron Tarko will be more cautious in how he mistreats his stock.
So he's still alive?
I'm afraid so. You said were, put in Leia. You and Kota were on the same side. Juno couldn't meet the princess's observant eye. It was she who worried Juno more than the others. Her father had been an old friend of the general. They'd known each other longer than Juno had been alive.
Kota fell on Cater Nymoidia, Juno said. His end of our joint mission was not successful.
The air in the conference room seemed to solidify as the news sank in.
Did you try?
Bill Iblis began, but cut himself off. The thought didn't need to be finished.
You were constrained by your orders, said Mon Mothma, nodding. That I understand, but do you see where you have left us? By assisting Kota, by actively encouraging him in his reckless solo campaign against the Empire, you have cost the Rebel Alliance our most experienced general. Can you honestly say that we have benefited from this outcome?
Juno met the Senator's accusatory stare without flinching. I believe he would have died anyway. Perhaps long before now, without my help. You know his history as well as I do. He was never going to sit around and watch as opportunities came and went.
She's right, said Bill Iblis. The longer we wait, the more people like Coda we're going to lose.
But if we attack now, we might lose everything.
The passion in Mon Mothma's voice was naked. Even by hologram, the mixture of grief and determination could not be mistaken.
Renegades like Kota would have us die by degrees or burn in one final conflagration. There must be another way.
There is, said Juno. All eyes turned back to her. This was the moment she had prepared for all the way from Cato Nymoidia. She wasn't going to let it slip through her fingers.
We've lost a general, she said, and we must mourn him. But we can't let a setback like this knock us off course.
She said the words with a faint sense of deja vu, remembering the traumatic times after the agreement on Kashyyyk. Except then, they had been Kota's words, not hers.
We must find a replacement for him. A military leader who will rally people to our cause. Someone who comes with his own resources, as Kota did. But someone who also captures the perfect balance of action and caution we need to embody if we're going to win this war.
Do you have someone in mind, Captain?
Asked Mon Mothma. She was ready for this, too.
I've been hearing about a Mon Calamari called Akbar, a slave we rescued from the Eriadu system.
Captain Akbar has pledged his support of the Alliance. We already have him on our side.
But we don't have his people, Juno persisted. They were among the slaves Kota tried to free on Cater Nymoidia. If we can earn the support of the Mon Calamarians, then we get their soldiers and their ships with them.
Didn't I just hear you talking about the MC-80 Starcruisers as I came in? Imagine if we had the resources of the entire Mon Cal shipyards at our disposal.
Wouldn't the Emperor have to sit up and take notice of us then?
Vetus nodded, and so did Bill Iblis.
He would have no choice,
said the senator from Corellia.
There are no guarantees the DAC resistance movement will ever join our cause,
said Mon Mothma. We've approached them several times. They remain unconvinced we mean business.
Actions speak louder than words, said Bel Iblis.
I agree, said Juno. A decisive strike against the Empire on Dak, with the support of Captain Akbar, and they'll come around for sure. It's exactly the opportunity we need.
And what if it goes wrong?
Asked Mon Mothma.
What if this mission fails, as Kotas did, and we lose Akbar as well? Then we'd be even worse off than we are now.
Juno felt some of the frustration that must have boiled inside Kota ever since the optimistic early days of the Alliance. She wasn't afraid for herself and the fate of her career. The Alliance itself was at stake now, bound up in endless bickering and disputes.
Princess, she said, you're very quiet.
Leia looked up at her.
I don't feel that I can offer an opinion without further consultation. But your father has the deciding vote, and you represent him. So, I would like to consult with him before I cast that vote, if you don't mind.
The firmness of the rebuff took Juno by surprise. She had felt sure that Leia's opinion would be the same as hers. It was she, after all, who had cemented the agreement on Kashyyyk. She who had chosen his family's crest to represent the hope they all had felt, then for the future. It didn't help that Bel Iblis looked as frustrated as Juno felt.
We mustn't rush in, Juno,
said Mon Mothma, her tone ameliorating now that it was clear she had the upper hand.
Kota has barely been gone a day, and threats close in on all sides. Let us choose carefully. Let's not be blinded, as Kota was, by the dream of an easy victory. We learned the hard way that this will never be our lot.
Juno knew she was thinking of the Death Star, still lurking somewhere in an unknown state of readiness. They had come so close to the Emperor and failed to take him down. Had they only succeeded then, they would never have been having this conversation. Juno forced herself to use the only name she could bear to think of him as anymore.
You wouldn't be saying that if Starkiller were here.
Mon Mothma's expression hardened.
He's not here, so the point is irrelevant.
I think you've said enough, Captain Eclipse,
interrupted Commodore Vidas with a pronounced Rodian lisp.
Leave us now, while we discuss what happens next.
I'm prepared to resign my commission over this, Juno said, reaching up to tug off the four red pips of her captain's insignia. The very thought of it pained her. But to stand aside and do nothing? To wait, while a golden opportunity slipped them by?
Don't be so hasty, said the Commodore. We might well court-martial you first.
She dropped her hands to her sides, feeling nothing but defeat.
Of course. That was what he had meant by what happens next.
Adding impulsive defiance to her case wasn't going to help the matter of her disobedience with regard to orders.
Yes, sir, she said, snapping off a quick salute. I await your decision.
Corporal Sparks will show you to the officer's mess.
The door opened behind her, and she exited quickly, without glancing at Mon Mothma or Leia. Garmbel Iblis gave her an encouraging look, but he was as powerless as she was, outvoted by his co-leaders of the Alliance, and hemmed in by logistical realities. Without ships, they couldn't fight. If they couldn't fight, they'd never get any more ships. At this rate, the rebellion would either tear itself apart or die of attrition before another year was out. She was shown to the mess by a bright-eyed young woman who looked barely old enough to be a private, let alone a corporal. Advancement came quickly in any movement afflicted by heavy losses. In the mess, Juno was offered refreshments and a chance to rest, but she declined.